is Women's Rights, a podcast about women's ordination, written and produced by students at Smith College. Hi, I'm Julian.
I'm Mary.
And I'm Grayson.
We're your hosts for this episode of Women's Rights. This season, we are exploring the story of Ordained Women, a feminist group working for women's ordination in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Ordained Women gained national notoriety for their direct action events in October 2013 and April 2014, and then again when their spokesperson, Kate Kelly, was excommunicated by the LDS Church in June of 2014. A decade after all of this, we talk with some of the women who helped organize Ordained Women in its direct action events, and we learned about the impact of this group on their lives and on the LDS Church, who still does not ordain women.
Each episode of our series investigates a different topic. Last episode, we talked about organizing efforts done by Mormon feminists and the Ordained Women organization. Today, we're going to look at direct action, which were actions taken by Ordained Women in order to achieve their goal of women's ordination in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We're going to ask about how Ordained Women developed their philosophy around direct action, how they figured out what actions they would take, and hear about Ordained Women's 2013 protests at Temple Square.
Ordained Women is a unique movement in that those criticizing the LDS Church were members of the church themselves. As members of a church so frequently painted as strict and authoritarian, it isn't surprising to see that the actions and philosophy of Ordained Women had been strongly influenced by the members' Mormon identity. Would they be ostracized by their community members? Should they try to preserve connections with people who don't agree with their movement? Lifelong feminist and academic Lori Stromberg recalls that the specific language used in Ordained Women's messaging was important to connect with a Mormon audience.
I personally, and I talked about this in lots of meetings, I said we have to be scrupulously honest in what we write. We shouldn't overstate our case. We should, authentic in what we can say. And that's hard too, because how do you represent people who are coming at Mormonism in a variety of ways? Some had already left the church, but were cared about women and had families, members in the church, and they cared about women in the church structure. Some were hadn't been active for many years, but because they saw Ordained Women, it gave them hope that maybe there was the structure could change and they could come back. Some were, you know, a very high number were very much believers and wanted to work on making a structure they, not the structure they loved, but the church they loved be a more equitable community, and were very active in the church. So we had this whole thing. How do you write? How do you represent yourself as an institution to that is inclusive of all those people? You know, how do you not turn off the very people you want to reach? You know, you're going to offend some people just by, I mean, the whole idea of just saying women and ordination in the same sentence offends, you know, a lot of Orthodox Mormons. But we tried very hard to come up with a language that, a language that was clear and didn't pull punches, really. You know what I mean? We tried to come up with a language that was clear and strong, but also sensitive to the people we wanted to reach.
Joanna Smith recalls that portraying the group as active, involved Mormons was important to effectively spread their message.
We dressed intentionally. We dressed... We talked about our dress. We intentionally dressed in purple. We intentionally dressed like 1960s housewives. Like, we intentionally made those choices. Like, if you see me 10 years ago today, I'm in a big, huge purple dress with a big, huge, giant petticoat and bright yellow shoes and a bright yellow umbrella. And everything, we tried to make it like we were all temple recommend holders, so everything was garment worthy, because we were proud of what we were doing and we wanted to be and show the face of what strong women in the church look like.
As Ordained Women's capacity to effect real change to the deeply rooted patriarchal structures of the LDS Church required prolonged action from its members, strategies to ensure movement sustainability were important to consider. Direct action for Ordained Women could not end after a singular action. Thus, the next question we posed was, what was the process of determining the most effective course of action, especially concerning the sustainability and impact of movement?
We did not think about sustainability within the movement until too late. Other people thought of sustainability differently, and I've learned a lot from that too. So we were walking down Temple Square at an action. It was the Ready to Witness campaign, and a woman came out. She's probably in her 60s or 70s. And she was holding the hand of her grandchild. It was obviously a little granddaughter. And they had just come out of a session, and she spit on us. So she said to us first, "You're not doing this for me. You don't speak for us. No Mormon woman wants you around." And then Deborah Jensen like reached out and grabbed my hand so I didn't like freak out. And Deborah said, "We're not doing it for you. We're doing it for her." So I know many people like Deborah. Their sustainability plan wasn't in us doing the sustaining. It wasn't in this movement or this organization doing the sustaining. It's the what we were speaking about.
In Voices for Equality, Ordained Women and Resurgent Mormon Feminism, Lori Stromberg asserts the importance of considering movement sustainability when organizing direct action within the Ordained Women movement. She elaborated on this point during our interview with her.
We were trying to reach a group that couldn't even imagine women's ordination. You have to have a critical mass. Otherwise, you just seem like this little group of disgruntled, malcontents. And so that was critical. We had to make sure we had a critical mass, and we needed more time because we launched the website in 2013 on the anniversary of the founding of the Relief Society, the church's organization for women. And that was in March, and April conference was coming up really soon. Two, it just seemed we needed to have more time to actually come up with a boots on the ground action. It just seemed like it would take longer to have that critical mass. And so what we did is we ended up having a lunch of ordained women meeting, and there we waited for the room to fill up, and it did. You know, there was a room about 80 to 100 people showed up. And we felt like with that, we'd have a critical mass and people signed up and we had this discussion about it. They could ask questions about who we were and what we were doing. And then we put it off until the next semi-annual conference, which was in October, to actually do the boots on the ground action.
We then asked our interviewees about their experiences with ordained women's direct actions, particularly the protests at the priesthood session at Temple Square. Arguably, ordained women's most notable direct action was the protest at the October 2013 General Conference of the LDS Church. Many of our interviewees organized and/or attended this protest, so we wanted to hear more about their on-the-ground experience. Their plan that day? Patiently wait in line for the priesthood session and request to enter. Before the conference, as Stromberg mentions in Voices for Equality, ordained women wrote to the LDS Church asking for tickets to the priesthood session in advance. Though they were denied, they moved to action. Deborah Monson described how ordained women planned the night before the protest.
We planned very carefully the night before. We brought in anyone who wanted to and did de-escalation training. And really warned people about like anybody, if anybody gets in your face, if any media wants to talk to you and you don't want to talk to them, you just tell them.
Joanna Smith described the day of the protest.
So the one that happened 10 years ago now, 10 years ago today, it was a beautiful sunny spring day. And we started walking over there. And then halfway through walking there, we walked from City Creek Center, which is about a block. We like walked around the block.
We met at a park. And had basically did a little devotional where people said prayers and we sang songs, and it was really beautiful. It was really beautiful. It felt just like any other Mormon event.
And so these images of men and boys, 12-year-old boys walking past us into the tabernacle, and we're standing there outside asking individually if we could be admitted and being turned away. It, you know, it went viral and was very effective because it was, we were in church attire, you know, we didn't have protest signs. We were just there.
And I'm like, there's this picture. It's just the worst, worst picture of me ever asking. Oh my God, this is so dumb. Asking if I could go in. And there was this part of my silly, juicy little heart that just really believed that they would say yes. I really believed that they would see us and say, what's the harm? Really, what's the harm in humiliating hundreds of women? And it turned out they said no. And then it was my job to stay on the line and help de-escalate and help move women through.
By the time the church lied about how many numbers of people were there, they said a few dozen women. And I'm like, I literally counted 246 people wrapped around, going all the way around the entire conference center, like a tabernacle. I'm like, there wasn't dozens. Like, that's not even true. But it didn't matter because I knew people saw us. And that was really beautiful to see. And there were lots of actions I planned that I wished could have happened, like the smoke. Still have purple smoke in my garage waiting for people to be brave enough to do the thing. But I learned so much from those women and our few male allies. And I did. I wouldn't change it for the world. The cost has been huge, humongous, absurd, and should never be paid. But if you asked me today to pay the price again, I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
In our next episode, we're going to be talking about opposition to women's ordination and the ordained women movement, discussing critiques posed by both people inside and outside the Mormon feminist movement, and backlash faced by members of ordained women.
That concludes our podcast for today. Our theme music was Bird Therapist by Craig MacArthur, used by an attribution, non-commercial, share-alike Creative Commons license. Special thanks to Lori Stromberg. Also, thanks to Dan Bennett and Meredith Richter of the Smith Learning, Research, and Technology team. And thanks to the Religion Department that supports public-facing student writing at Smith College. Tune in next time on Women's Rights.